This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Welcome to this special podcast edition of The Informer, where we'll hear extended interviews with guests from our conversion therapy episode. I'm Dean Arcuri. Robert has had his experience of gay conversion therapy shared in the media and was happy to share it with us here on Joy in this extended interview. The experiences of survivors of this so-called therapy. Since marriage equality, gay conversion therapy and transgender issues have continued to move forward in the Australian media and narrative, and we need to do more than just agree. We need to listen, we need to advocate, and we need to support. Now my extended interview with Robert.
I'm a pretty open book. I've shared most of my experiences on Facebook, and I don't have very many secrets.
You've shared your story on Facebook and you've shared that information. What do you see as the thing that people, the misconception that people might have once you share your story and the things that they don't understand when it comes to what conversion therapy is?
Well, in the Christian community, it's very interesting actually that quite a lot of gay people are faith-based people. More than you'd believe, actually. I think there's something that attracts us to faith, the numinous, the mysterious, because we are a bit different from everybody else. And I think that attracts us to spiritual things in the first place. So the misconceptions, I suppose, in the general community, the misconceptions are, well, why would you be a believer in the first place? I mean, there's often the dichotomy with gay people who think, well, what the fuck are you doing playing around with people that hate your guts? And there's a misconception in the Christian community that, oh, look, why would you choose to be gay? And those are the two things. People are outside the gay community are generally very accepting. In the church, they have this misconception that you choose to be gay, and that's the sort of fundamental starting point, is this choice that they seem to think that you make to be gay. But I don't ever remember being any different than I am now. Although, you know, I came out only about 4 and a bit years ago, and I'm in my mid-50s now. So I've hidden my sexuality for most of my life, even though I knew about it. 10 years ago, I was married in what I thought at the time was a loving relationship, although it turned out it was rather abusive. And the abuse kind of drove me to introspection. I was on a forum for bearded men, and I'd be on the forum, and I would discover in my underwear sort of wet patches and things like that, and it kind of, I put two and two together and realised that, well, if I was looking at men and having that kind of reaction, and I didn't do that when I was looking at my wife, well, there was something wrong. And I put two together and figured out, well, I must be gay, even though I kind of knew it already. Most of gay people will know that, won't they? You know, you kind of go through this, I'm not gay, I'm going to deny it, even though you know you are. Mm. I knew I was when I was about 9. And the horror, being a Christian, and I was evangelical fundamentalist Christian, so at one point I was state director for the Australian Christian Lobby. For 5 years, I was president of a Christian school in Mombulk. And it was a horror to think that I was gay, because the Christian community is so against gay people. You know, a lot of people think we should be shot on sight. So the horror of this realizing that I was gay was just, it was a body shock. And so I thought, well, I need to do something about this. I need to fix it. So I sought out help from my GP and my counsellor at the time, because I was having therapy for depression, because I was severely depressed. And he said, well, you know, you're gay. We don't fix that. That's normal. I wouldn't listen. I was so convinced that, you know, there must be something in my past that had caused me to be like that. I bought into the idea that it was my mum or my dad that had caused me to be like this. I then went to the church and I spoke to one of the pastors at City Life at the time, where I was going, in Monturner. And he said, oh, yes, we can help you with that. And he put me onto this couple, and they have a counselling centre. It's all very posh and looks very clinical, and they have special meeting rooms for one-on-one counselling and couples counselling and all this kind of stuff. It was a big setup there. And for about 6 months, I'd go every once or twice a week, and I would have this gay conversion therapy where they tried to... It was very painful. Every night I would go, I would burst into tears at some point, you know, more than once sometimes. I had to do all sorts of things, like I had to wear an elastic band and flick it every time I had sexual thoughts, which, of course, is every night. And if I'd get an erection at night and have sexual thoughts, I had to have a cold shower, which I did. Hands up, I did it all, because I thought that's what you had to do, because I didn't know any better. I was always been a bit naive when it comes to sex. I was brought up in the middle of nowhere, and my mum was a bit prudish, and Dad didn't talk about it. His idea of premarital sex talk was keep yourself clean.
And this was all why you were married?
Yes. You know, I wanted to be married. I thought I loved her, and I did love her. I was in love with the person. I just didn't realise that there was a sexual component to marriage, where you were physically attracted to somebody and there was a reaction that you got with it. Because I was so horrified at the prospect that I might be gay. I just didn't look. You know, if there was an attractive man came in the room, I just didn't look at him. Mm. Simple as that. And it was only when I started to realise after that gay conversion therapy, I went on a manliness course at church. You know, how to keep yourself sexually pure in your marriage and all this kind of stuff. I believe in fidelity and all that kind of stuff. You know, I'm happily partnered, and I wouldn't be unfaithful to my partner now. You know, I definitely wouldn't be. And So I went on this manliness course, and I fell in love with somebody. After I'd done the gay conversion therapy, I went on this manliness course, and there was this most gorgeous, and I won't describe him in detail in case he listens to this by any chance, because I don't want him to know that I fell in love with him. And he never knew, because he was just the most gorgeous looking person. He got the most wonderful personality. He just pressed all my buttons at once, and I thought, shit, I can't do this. I can't, you know, I'm still gay. I went for another 7-8 years in that marriage, trying my best to stay in the relationship. And the latter part of that 8 years, trying to work it out as a mixed orientation couple. But my ex was very fundamentalist, more fundamentalist than I was. And she wouldn't have it. The mere idea that somebody would be gay was just anathema to her. She couldn't even contemplate the idea that somebody could be gay and not act on it. So that was my experience of gay conversion. Latterly, I would count myself now as something of an advocate for the gay community in a modest way, particularly for the gay Christian community. I used to go to a very welcoming and affirming church in Ashburton, a Baptist church there, until recently. But I just, you know, a few things I just couldn't reconcile in my mind. And they're still part of the Baptist Union, which is very homophobic. I just couldn't rationalise. I couldn't make those things sit comfortably together. So anyway, we've moved down to Narrow Warren just recently, and I thought, well, time I ought to see if I could find a local church that was welcoming. So I've started to scan around and try to find it. Of course, they all aren't. And one church in particular, I got very irritated with them because they wouldn't tell me what their position was. So I did some secret shopping, and they offered me gay conversion therapy there and then.
Really?
So, yeah, oh yeah. Life International Church. So it's still going on, and it's still rife in the church. The attitude is that you choose to be gay. And that because you've made a choice, you can make an unchoice. You can choose not to be gay. But, of course, none of them would try and choose to be gay to prove the point.
It's really interesting when you've been talking about there's all these courses, all these programs within the church that are set up to do a certain thing. And it's just mind-boggling because you've talked about it in such a relaxed way. Oh, they have a manliness program to help with this. They have this to connect with this. Within religious organizations, you're so used to going, oh, yeah, there's that, and oh, yeah, there's that. And there seems to be so much more that's hidden under the surface of what actually is going on.
Well, I'm not sure it's that hidden. It's just that, as a friend of mine says, they live in, Christians, and particularly evangelical Christians, live in this kind of hyper-reality. They say that they're in the world, but really what's going on is they have this all-exclusive little bubble that they live in, and they are self-sufficient. You know, they have all sorts of ministry programs. Most of the bigger churches and even the smaller churches will have ministry programs where you can sign up for preaching programs and all this kind of stuff. And this is how I learned to do public speaking, through preaching at little Baptist churches in Cambridgeshire. And I would still count myself as a Christian. I just don't believe in the church. You know, I've been horrified by what I've seen lately with all this child abuse that's been going on, and the way that the church has just covered it up, and the hypocrisy of it, and standing there saying all this, not hardly saying anything about child abuse, and yet they're still, you know, in the marriage plebiscite last year, they were, the Anglicans in Sydney in particular, were standing up and saying, you know, marriage equality is nonsense. And at the same breath, they've got these paedophile priests who are abusing. And this is just the tip of the iceberg, of course. This is just the stuff that's come to attention. All the stuff that's going on. And it's terribly damaging, all of that. And I know it's terribly damaging because all that stuff I did with City Life and the gay conversion therapy all the those years ago set me back 10 years, you know, and it made me terribly anxious and depressed. I've had therapy for anxiety and depression for the last 10 plus years because of all of that. Yes, there are some other things that have impinged on that. You know, the breakup of my marriage, I can't see my children anymore because, you know, again, this fundamentalist thing gets in the way. They won't see me, they won't talk to me because I'm gay. And they won't even see their grandma who lives with me, my partner and I look after her, and they won't come to see her, even though she was desperately in need, because of this fundamentalist thing that I'm gay and they can't even come in the house and catch their catch. I don't know what they could catch.
What was it like when you were just when you were talking about, you know, doing the things like flicking the rubber band, having the cold showers? What was that like for you when you look back on it, doing all of that?
Well, look, I was into it. I thought that's what you had to do. It's kind of all part of the religious thing. You know, you believe in towing the line, and it's part of being. It's what it is, Dean. It's being part of the club. It's being part of, well, not club makes it sound trivial because it isn't. It's being part of the tribe. We, as I believe, as human beings, are tribal animals still. And the tribe is tremendously important to us. It's part of our identity. I had wrapped myself up completely in the identity of being an evangelical Christian. I went to church every week, and I was heavily involved with the Christian school. I was involved with Christian politics. Everything in my life centered around it. And all my friends were Christians. And when you come out, you lose all of that. It's stripped away from you. And that was one of the biggest shocks to the system, is to lose your tribe. We all have these little circles of friends. And when they're stripped away from you, it's devastating. I'm a migrant, as you probably can hear from my accent. And I came from the UK. It's not the whole story. I'm actually half Australian because Mum's Australian. But anyway, that's another story. But when I came here from the UK, you know, I left my British tribe behind me and I had to find a new tribe here. And the church provided that tribe for me. They just wrapped themselves around us and they provided furniture and all sorts of things for us to set up whilst we were waiting for our container to come from the UK. And you depend on them for so much. And suddenly when that tribe's stripped away from you because you've declared that you cannot subscribe to one of these fundamentalist tenets that being gay is wrong. The fact that you are gay and you can't... When I first was married, I used to have what I call black thoughts. And it was, you know, homosexual fantasies. And I managed, after about 10 years, to suppress these and I'd stop having them. But, you know, I had never put that two and two together. You know, the fact that I always was that. But suddenly, you know, I had my eyes opened and suddenly I realised, well, actually, no, I'm not straight, I'm gay. But I had a choice to make. And my choice was I wanted to stay inside this tribe. But when you declare, no, I don't want, I need to express my orientation, my sexuality, part of my identity, I don't need to fling myself on the nearest man that walks along. But, you know, being gay it has always annoyed me that being gay is so wrapped up with sex. And I can be gay without being sexual with you. People know that I'm gay before, you know, they don't have to jump into bed with me to know that I'm gay. They know that I'm gay by the way I stand, the way I had to train myself not to have a limp wrist, all this kind of stuff. I'm sure most of the listeners will understand that, you know, that when you're gay, there are certain things that you do, you just can't help doing them. It's just part of it. And I had to look in the mirror. My sister said to me, don't hold your wrist like that. People will think you're gay.
When we're trying to change something, especially change things that are going on within religions, it can always be this scenario where it means that the religion is being attacked. Now, as someone that's come from a religious background that understands where they're coming from on many different levels, how do you think we can combat, or what can we do? How can we combat conversion therapy within religions without letting people thinking we're attacking the religion?
Oh, that's another good question.
I'm full of them. And it's one of those questions as well where it's like, if I knew the answer, if only I knew, like, I don't know how we can do it.
Well, there are a number of Christians high up in evangelical circles and in other Christian circles, and obviously I won't name names, who have become more affirming and welcoming of Christians. The problem is the way the traditional interpretation of the scriptures has gone is so difficult to overcome. It's like politics. You know, people are rusted on Liberal voters, they're rusted on Labour voters, and even if there are glaring things that are going wrong with those particular parties, they won't change their opinions. You know, they back them to the hilt. You know, you're a short man or you're a Turnbull man, whichever, or woman, or whichever way you go, there are people that are rusted on like that. It kind of like challenges their identity to believe otherwise. So the problem in the church is a political one, that even those that believe that being gay isn't a choice have this uphill battle to fight that they can't come out in their churches for fear of losing their livelihoods, for one thing, because, you know, they'll get kicked out. And that's happened. There's a lovely man who is a straight ally who was a pastor at a church in Lilydale. And he came to this opinion and said, well, you know, gay people are just like the rest of us and they don't make a choice to be gay. We need to affirm them and welcome them into our congregations. But the church kicked him out because it didn't agree with the traditional understandings of Scripture. And it's this huge political battle that they have to overcome. So the way to fix it is to show mainstream Christianity that gay people are not a threat to faith. In fact, there was a survey recently, and I can't remember where it was, that said, you know, that the majority of gay people have a faith. And actually, the number of people I know, you have to come out of the church when you come out because you're so rejected. But it doesn't need to be like that, because my understanding, the way I came to know the Lord, was because of love. And the gospel's about love. It's not about hate. And I think it's to show Christians that we aren't a threat to them. that we just want to worship the same way that they do. The traditional understandings of Scripture, and to be honest, you know, I'm not a theologian, but everybody says that, don't they? I'm not a theologian, but I'm not a politician, but and you know something else, they're going to make a political statement or a theological statement.
Yeah.
I'm not a theologian, but there are only six anti-gay verses in the Bible, and the word homosexuality didn't appear in the Bible until 1948. Well, that tells you to start off that that's a modern concept. And the typical one that's always quoted at people, the one about Sodom and Gomorrah, isn't about homosexuality at all. It's about gang rape to shame another group, which was practiced commonly in the Middle East in the ancient times. And it's not about homosexuality at all. It's about depravity, and it's about lack of hospitality. And that's what the story of Sodom and Gomorrah about. Father, what's his name? Rod Gosford, Anglican, often has this lovely board that people see memes of going around on social media. And one of his memes recently was about Peter Dutton being a sodomite because he was not welcoming to a foreigner. And that's what that passage is. And then when you start from there, well, and then the other verses in the scriptures actually aren't as condemnatory as first reading would make you believe. Mm. But I don't think that the church will be won over by theological arguments. I think the church will be won over by them seeing gay people and understanding that we are not a threat. And I think this is a culture clash that has come out about over the last 50 years since the gay community has become more visible. It was possible 50 years ago to say, well, there aren't any gay people because you never saw them. And, you know, people like me, I'm in my 50s, and I was brought up in rural Britain. Being gay was very dangerous. So you hid it. You buried it. You married somebody. Mm. You did what was expected of you. And there are probably still gay men who are married and happily married. Unfortunately, I married an abuser. And if I hadn't have done that, I probably would still be happily married and wouldn't have the faintest idea I was gay. I think the battle will be won by love, not by preaching at people. I think it's by being visible and being in churches. You know, I'm almost tempted to rock up at some churches, you know, wearing a rainbow scarf and say, look, you know, here I am, deal with me. I'm not going away.
Robert, thank you for sharing your story. If you'd like to sign a petition to outlaw gay conversion therapy in Australia, simply head to change.org and search for Praying the Gay Away, or look in the description of this podcast. I'm Dean Arcuri.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.